We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is Darius Miller.
This is Drew Hardy.
This is Lance Thomas, Tyreek Evans.
Jason Smith.
Anthony Davis of the New Orleans Pelicans.
You're listening to.
And you are listening to In the Know.
In the Know.
The Bourbon Street Shots.
Bourbon Street Shots podcast.
All Pelicans, all the time.
Welcome to the show. The Pelicans put up a 0-3 showing this week. Depressing fans everywhere. In fact, Michael McNamara became so depressed that he is taking a brief hiatus from In the Know. And in his place, we have Dr. Jason Kalmes, one of our frequent posters and writers on the site, guy who generally kicks all of our butts behind the scenes to make us do stuff. Jason, thanks for coming on.
Yep, no problem. Should be good.
So we're going to approach this almost the same way we normally do. We'll have a slightly different, little less focus on the games that we just had and games coming up, and we just wanted to talk about some general topics primarily. So we did have an 0-3 week, but there is news rolling around right now that's a little bit more important than that. It's actually as a direct consequence of the 0-3 week, I have a feeling. Right now, they have announced that Darius Miller and Patrick Young have been waived. Before we get to what that means, who they might be bringing in, do you have any regrets that we have seen the last of Darius Miller and have never seen Patrick Young in an NBA game?
I don't have any real regrets about Miller. I think Miller had his run. I think he had his chances. And his weaknesses just have never corrected. The primary one for me is he just did not shoot enough. This season, there hasn't been a huge sample size, but what I've seen hasn't shown me a change. But last year, when Luke Babbitt came in, Luke Babbitt shot like twice as often as him. And he was the new guy. You know what I mean? And Patrick Young, kind of an alluring player, you know what I mean, on paper. Mm-hmm. But so I'm sad we don't get to see that unfold here, but hopefully there's good reason. We'll see.
Yeah, Patrick Young was one of those guys who everybody always focused on his physique and his bulging, well-defined muscles. And if you look at his Florida career, he was not much of a rebounder percentage-wise. He wasn't much of a scorer. I mean, he was a fine defender against college players, but we're talking about taller, faster NBA players. So I would like to have seen Young play a little bit, but I'm not, like, thinking this is at all devastating. There's a reason he went undrafted. So And it doesn't preclude them bringing him back next year or the year after that. If he goes overseas and shows he can play, then they can always bring him back some other time. But these end of bench players like that, they rarely have a huge impact. And, you know, Miller, by all accounts, is a wonderful person, but he was a shooting guard in a small forward's body who wouldn't shoot. And I don't know. I will miss his one or two fantastic passes per game because I'm a big fan of clever passing, and he could actually do that. And it's something that this team doesn't do a whole lot. They don't pass very often. And I think I put that in one of our posts. They are bottom three in the league for number of passes per game. Do you think that means anything, or is that just something I'm throwing out there as a stat that's neat?
I think it's pretty meaningful. Okay. I will say that I agree with you. I thought Miller was very sort of cerebral player. He seemed very smart. He impressed me in that way. But I can't help but think it might have been a little bit of analysis paralysis thing. And he, by trying to not make certain mistakes, he just made others, like you said, not shooting. But in terms of the passing, the team in general, clearly, as you say, doesn't pass that much. But it's sort of the nature of them not passing. The guys are trying to get to the basket. And when you have guys that can streak to the basket, we have a bunch of weapons that can open up the holes by cutting over here so the guy over there can streak to the basket. I mean, that works. But these guys don't finish. So the passing should be the better option. And they don't take advantage of it. Or they don't buy it. And, Tyreek's assist numbers sort of disguise that he's one of the culprits in my mind. A lot of his passes are passes out in the hole he just created in his wake and not passes to the big men who are near him, who can actually go up and make a very high percentage shot. Or hopefully something that's not a shot, like a dunk, right?
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it's the nature of the not passing, right? It's the other choices they end up making that are really killer because they end up with nothing.
Yeah, and I mean, the whole passing thing, I mean, on one hand, this is where I like run into problems. This team, even with two fairly poor offensive showings in a row, is still easily, I think it's their top seven offensive efficiency, might be top eight, I can't remember. I think they're seventh right now in the entire league, a team that doesn't pass. So on one hand, their ability to get to the basket is causing all kinds of offensive efficiencies to occur. They're, even if they're missing their layups, they're still better shots than taking a mid-range jumper. They're still able to be cleaned up and put back. So on one hand, I feel like I'm complaining stupidly that they're not passing, but it does bother me that when was the last time you saw them actually move the ball around the perimeter? Like, if you watch a San Antonio game, you'll see them whip that ball around the perimeter probably 10 times in a game. I can't remember the last time the Pelicans passed the ball around the perimeter.
Nor do I. The Wizards game the other night, they had a couple, I guess, series where they would pass the ball a lot. But it was someone on the perimeter passing to someone who would streak under the basket, give it to someone who would come into the lane and then come back out. And that person, the time I'm thinking of is Rivers, and the wall picked his pocket. That was Rivers' only turnover. But I couldn't really see what they were trying to do either. You know, and the passes weren't, like you say, around the perimeter. They were passes that were just short hits with no end game, right? And I mean, this relates to something that gets talked about a lot, is the turnovers. The Pelicans don't turn the ball over. Well, they're limiting mistakes, but they're limiting mistakes by not playing the passing game. And so that's limiting their upside. So it's not a good way to not turn the ball over. You're not turning the ball over by sort of being cowardly or by hiding your weakness rather than actually being adept at protecting the ball. Do you know what I mean?
Yep, absolutely.
I don't lose any money at the casino because I don't gamble. You know?
Right.
And that's true. but that doesn't actually mean that I'm a good gambler. So.
Yeah. And really, all of our players, that's the one truth about our team. I would classify every player we have as a finisher, even Drew Holiday, although he is the furthest from that of all of our players. But they're all primarily focused on finishing. They're not there to create. Drew Holiday sometimes goes into creator mode, but he doesn't look to create. So all of our plays, the common horn sets that we run, they're to get the ball so there can be one handoff, and then whoever got the ball on that handoff is generally there to create and just take a shot. And they're not there to like try to probe and look for another way or wait for cutters. They're pretty much there to shoot. So it's almost like a shock when somebody cuts and the person with the ball actually finds them with it. That's probably why people complain about this offense, even though the offense is actually fairly efficient in the end. I just think that's the nature of all our guards. You've already mentioned you think Tyreke Evans is a major part of that. I think Drew is a lesser part of that. Eric Gordon was part of that. Anthony Davis is part of this. Anderson might be a bigger one than any of them because Anderson is 100% looking for a shot if he touches the ball. What do you think of Austin Rivers? Because he's moved into the starting lineup and he has been dreadful. Do you think he's looking to run an offense, or do you think he's just looking for a shot and they're not falling like they have in the past? Like, what do you think's wrong with Rivers here?
I was asking myself this all week, and I was asking other people, and some of the people I was talking to's opinion is that, you know, that's just it. You've reached the top of Rivers Mountain. This is entirely possible. I thought that, you know, he's just trying to score and sort of prove himself, whether that be to him, to Monty, or to whoever's going to write his next check. Because by not picking up his option, potentially, you've created someone who is now engaging in a marketing campaign. This theory was somewhat discounted by a smart guy. I nevertheless present it, you know, and I consider his opinion, but I think that's reasonable. You know, Rivers has proven to be somewhat mentally fragile. I don't know what the best word is, but I've watched him hit free throws in practice at a better rate than he does on the floor during a game, right? The only explanation that I have for this is that he plays differently in games than in practice. And so, and I attribute that to the only common variable between practice and all the other NBA courts is him. So there's something about him that limits his game, and I don't think he's gotten over it. I think he'll continue to show little flashes, but he has something in it that I can't really explain, but he can't take his talent, and I'm not sure how much it is, but he can't take it and display it well on the court consistently.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a little bit of a duh factor, right? Clearly right. We see that, but I honestly just think it's not something that you can, that a coach that's on this team can come in and tweak. There's no button to turn that they're not turning. It just hasn't worked. So.
Yeah, and I mean, he did play better off the bench, and you know, there's nothing wrong with being a guard whose career is being a decent backup guard who can be effective against second units and is going to fail against the bigger, better lineups in the NBA. It's not bad. It's not a guy you want to be paying $3 or $4 million to. And so far, he's been showing that he can't handle the starting lineup. It's pretty awful.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, I'm this is just data. I'm not trying to be a Rivers apologist here. But I think we all clearly remember his first start, right?
Yeah.
Because it was the night Eric Gordon, you know, was declared not going to play for this team, right, for a while, get E to California, and Austin Rivers is in the starting lineup. Am I remembering this correctly?
That's correct.
Yeah. And so here's a guy fresh out of college, wasn't supposed to start, and has to take a place of Mr. Mack's contract, right? This is a lot of pressure. Then he failed, right, to play at an NBA replacement level, which I don't see why anybody would expect him to. Then he continued to play because Monty asked him to, or Monty played him. And in a world with other options, a rational coach would not play such a bad player. He would put his replacement level player in. But he didn't have one, or at least he didn't feel he had one he could trust. So right. Austin had what some people would term to be the worst, you know, start in any NBA career. And it was well publicized. And he sat there and took it and did it every night. And on one hand, told in this light, you could say, well, there's considerable favor that you could give to Austin Rivers for doing that. But at what cost? If I'm even telling an accurate story, at what cost are we looking at the effects of that abuse that he took for two plus months? I don't know.
Yeah.
And I don't know the guy, but it's not insane. He's having trouble being a starter, but not as much on the bench, ... You know, I don't know.
Yeah. So Rivers, I almost want to say the same thing I said about Eric Gordon. I don't think he should be he's going to play this bad forever. But I don't have the same confidence saying that as I did with Eric Gordon. Like, Eric Gordon, I know he's capable of scoring 15 points a game, 16 points a game, and he's not going to shoot 20% from the field for a season. That's just, he's not going to do that. But Austin Rivers, you know, he could shoot 36, 37% from the field for a season, and I don't think I'd be that shocked by it. So, you know, Rivers, he's got to get back. We've got to be able to get him back to the bench, which means we've got to be able to bring in somebody to replace him. There haven't been any sort of rumors so far about who they might be grabbing or bringing in that would impact Rivers in any way. But the whole Miller and Young leaving, the rumor that's going wild right now, we think it's pretty confirmed that it's this guy, but we're not 100% certain. Dante Cunningham. For a lot of you, probably never heard of him. He's been a NBA journeyman with trips to Minnesota, to Memphis. He is a guy that is kind of small for a power forward position. In fact, if you go look at his information on Basketball Reference, they even list him as a small forward for a couple seasons, or a PFSF. So undersized power forward, he doesn't shoot from distance particularly well, though his mid-range game is okay. Cunningham is a weird pick, though, because this team's front court, some would argue, is its strength. Jason, what do you think Dante would bring to this team that would help them right now?
Yeah, I mean, I'm doing the same as a lot of people. Reading, doing a little research, watching YouTube, trying to remember what people say about him. But I think this is a move to put somebody either on the bench or in the practice facility. You know, he's been with Monty before. He's been on a few NBA teams. They seem to need some leadership. Maybe this is a guy that can do that, you know, in practice. In terms of play, some energy would be a good thing. We've heard other people say, and we've observed, that they seem a little sluggish, or they need a jolt, so that could help. He seems to be a competent defender, so on the bench, playing a forward-type role, he and Ryan Anderson could sort of switch off their offensive and defensive roles as threes and fours, and maybe provide a good squad of forwards. Additionally, on the balance sheet, he's a cheap guy, and he might be undervalued because of the legal problems that he had due to some issues where he's apparently been completely cleared, and so I won't get into that. But if they sign him soon to a minimum contract, he could have some value in a trade come the trade deadline. So there could be a few different reasons to do this. And, you know, if he actually is a contributor, other teams might would want him. But, you know, we have flexibility to waive some guys and bring somebody in. So that's a good thing. And then also they've shown a commitment to veterans, which has its downside, as we all know. But this is potentially one of the upsides. So
young veterans. He's only 26.
Yep.
So
and 5 years of experience.
Yeah, that's very true. This is what I was – so his best year he had was in Memphis. He hasn't played anywhere near that level any other times. But I will say this. Like, looking at his lines, his advanced numbers and his shooting percentages from certain distances and how many shots he takes from those distances, you know what he reads to me? He reads Jason Smith to me. He takes about – based on this last year, he took about 70% of his shots from 10 feet to the 3-point line. So inside in the dumb zone, took about 60% the year before, about 50% the year before that. But he hits them. He's not a bad shooter from there NBA league wide. Like, he shoots about 42% from that range, which is pretty good for a player of his type. It's actually pretty good for guards, even. So if you want a pick-and-pop guy, he is able to do that from the mid-range and still hit those shots. He's a pretty solid offensive rebounder based on his numbers. And his block shot numbers are actually pretty good for any sort of power forward. So if you want a guy who comes in and competes on defense and gets some block shots and grabs a couple offensive rebounds for you and can hit that mid-range jumper, it sounds like Jason Smith to me. So I guess that's my high-end hope, is that we've got a Jason Smith replacement here. My one issue with that is always those guys end up taking shots possibly from Anderson, but I don't know if that's entirely a bad thing. Anderson having somebody else on the floor as a decoy or someone they have to worry about may help him, because he's under pressure pretty much consistently against every team. They know he's a monster threat, and they stay on him.
Yeah, and additionally, if he's a competent defender and someone who can also stretch the defense away, not only from Anderson but from the people under the rim, if this help gets Evans a little more space to actually finish in those times where there's overlap, because there's overlap with all these high minutes guys, this might be worth the shots that he's taking away that are for more efficient players. That being said,
right.
People have to take mid range jumpers, so why not get somebody who's above average at it? So
yep. And right now, Babbitt, you kind of hoped that he would be that guy who could do some small forward, power forward swing moments, and he's not hitting a shot. He's not being particularly great on defense. He's just – it's questionable. And Dante at least has the athleticism to be a possibly decent defender for the Pelicans, which is something they need. Because, again, everybody talks about the offense, but this team, the one thing that's consistent from last year, their offense has improved. They are a better offense than last year. Their defense is the same. It's garbage. They're 25th in the league right now. It's terrible. So let me ask you this question. Eric Gordon, are you missing him now? I mean, I know you love Gordon. I know Gordon's your favorite player ever to put on the Pelicans uniform. But is there some feeling you have that, like, if we just had Gordon, things would be a little bit better?
Is this the Eric Gordon that's the David West that changed his name to Eric Gordon? Or the one that was born Eric Gordon?
The one that was born Eric Gordon.
Oh, that Eric Gordon. Okay, now you confused me for just a moment. I've heard people say this, that he's a decoy and all this other stuff, and I buy it. Okay, Eric Gordon is overall an average to above average NBA player with some very good skills and some very big holes, as opposed to a guy who's just sort of mush at everything. He, even when he was playing horribly at the beginning of this year, it was a large amount of effort and tenacity, and he was making mistakes. Fouling too much, taking weird shots.
Bad turnovers.
Like, yeah. So, everything was off. But still, he's on the scouting report, he has a reputation, and that creates some trepidation in the other team. When that's not there, then, where before the animals would simply be surrounding you and ready to pounce, now their teeth are baring. You know what I mean? Just without that guy there, they can be a little more brazen. And I think they're essentially calling the bluff of the defense now, and they're winning when they call the bluff, meaning the other team. Eric Gordon, I think, has always been an all right defender, at least partially just because of his reputation. People wouldn't tangle with him, so they make different choices. So you don't always see the effect of his defense. Now they're just going at Rivers because he has the opposite reputation, right, as a cream puff.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Even if we know he's a decent defender, they're going to be more brazen. And then eventually you start to believe it. I must be a bad defender because they're just picking on me. So in that regard, I think we are missing Eric Gordon. I personally believe that the team will be better off in the end not having to contend with but just go ahead and get settled now for life without Eric Gordon. But this is more of a long term thing. This isn't trying to talk about how we're going to win over the next 2-3 weeks. Winning over the next 2-3 weeks, Eric Gordon's absence is certainly a problem.
So then let me ask you this question. So everybody's known this team has been kind of shallow. We are kind of hoping the bench would be a lot better than it is. It hasn't come through. Russ has looked absolutely abysmal. I'm kind of missing Brian Roberts as a backup point guard, which makes me really cringe. If you, though, were Monty Williams, you woke up, your giant beard is not there anymore, your hair is all gone, you're Monty Williams. You're walking in, going into work today. And what is your magic bullet? What would be the one thing you'd walk in to practice and say, and you didn't have to care about egos because tomorrow you're not Monty Williams again anymore. You're going to go back to being Jason Collins. So you can just go in and make one change for a game. You don't have to worry about somebody being upset and pouting over the next week because they're not a starter anymore or whatever kind of egos are playing. What is the one thing you think would be best to make this team play well, like mesh better? Because that's really what our problem is, in my opinion, is like these guys – they're not meshing together in the right ways we need them to. And there's always some horrible gap to exploit.
Yeah. Honestly, I know the offense is very efficient, but they go on some pretty good droughts where they're not shooting, they're turning the ball over, they're rebounding poorly, things like this. And my move would be a gamble, admittedly. I would take Rivers out of the starting lineup, put him on the bench, and I would put Jimmer Fredette in. And I would, even if I'm only there for a day, I would say, you're my shooting guard now. You're the guy. So get used to it. You're going to get 30 some odd minutes a night. Enjoy.
Wow. 30 minutes, huh?
I would tell him that. but that's what I would try to do. I would try my best to see if Jimmer Fredette is in that body. I don't know that he is, but there are no other trees to shake.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, that's why I say it's a gamble. Like, but what else are you going to do? Tell Ashik to take threes? You know, we can ask people to do things they can't do, or we can ask people to do things they're supposed to do. And we can try something we haven't tried. And that's why I would choose that. Not because I think he's great. I see this this reputation that's backed by data, and I see a guy whose confidence is potentially pretty shot.
Yeah. I mean, that's my whole thing, is I was trying to think of what I would say if somebody asked me that question. What would you do if you were Monty that would make this team run? And I can't honestly, I mean, that's as good as anything I could come up with, and I'm not in love with anything I came up with. I would probably end up playing the big three big men together a little more and just go with it, and said, you know what, Davis will have to try to guard small forwards. But I hate that idea too, because where is Davis most effective? By the basket. You put him on a small forward, he's on the perimeter the whole time. He's not doing that. He's not going to be getting four blocks a game. He's not going to be getting five blocks a game.
Yeah, and so, even if you say that's just on defense, he's still on half the floor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if he's kind of in the middle, he can sort of hit the middle half of the floor, right? Which is, in a sense, right, a more effective half than the left half or the right half, right?
Right.
And so nailing him down, I think, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, Elmer Fudd or whatever has his finger in one hole and the bigger hole over there that was created when you took the steps to the left. You know, yeah. It's just, you're going to leak. You just have to minimize it. But no, I've looked at this a few times. I mean, you, it would be nice if you could give Ajensa a bigger role, but you can't. Right? Because he can't fulfill it. Because he can't stop fouling. Right? Who else is underused? So maybe Salmons will do something, but I don't know what to tell Salmons. Right? You know what I mean? Like, so it's what would I do? I don't know what to tell him other than just say, go play. But to me, he doesn't excel at anything. Right? Like, I tend to not look at his starters and bench. This confuses me. I look at it as guys who get high minutes and then these little either relief players or specialists. So to me, Jimmer's a specialist. So stick him out there and just hope that he catches fire enough to either really hurt another team or put the fear of God into him.
All right.
You know,
okay.
Long term, maybe develop Russ Smith, but you can't do that in the next month. Maybe you can do that in March. Maybe he'll be ready, because he's a disaster when he goes out there. I like what I see, but it doesn't finish well at all. He's a pesky little dude, and that's great. But pesky for 6 seconds, and then he turns the ball over when he's on offense. That doesn't work out.
Yeah, the ridiculous is outweighing the rusticulous at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So we got... This whole discussion is coming because, of course, the team went 0-3, losing to Sacramento, Atlanta, and Washington. Which, you know, Washington is a good team. Atlanta's a middling, and Sacramento are middling teams. The Murderers Row coming up here, this is not a good time to be not on the top of your game. So Tuesday they get OKC, which has Russell Westbrook back. Thursday, it's got Golden State, which is playing the best, has the best defense in the league right now, and an offense in the top 10, which they haven't had despite, you know, the Splash Brothers before the season. They've always been middling to poor offensively. And then they get the Clippers on Saturday, and a back-to-back just to, you know, make it that much harder. they get the Los Angeles Lakers, but of course they get them on the second night of a back-to-back on a long road trip. So what is your prediction, knowing the team is not clicking right at the moment and having these four teams on the docket for this next week? You think that they have a chance to pick up any games, or are you more optimistic than I am and you think that they're going to get a few at least?
I mean, I honestly think 2-2 is reasonable, with 1-3 being right in there. Let's go ahead and call the Lakers a gimme, right?
Okay, we can do that, though it is back-to-back.
Well, but it's L.A., right?
They are pretty bad.
I'm enjoying this.
You just love that, don't you? You
while
just love...
You know what I'm saying? Like,
yep.
I'm gonna while I have it, I'm gonna use it because I won't be able to do it forever. I know that.
Yeah.
But right now, I'm gonna stick it to them, and then I think they'll work out one of the other three. I mean, I couldn't tell you which one, but if gun to the head, the Clippers, you know, because it's L.A.
Right. So you think they're gonna lose to OKC and Golden State and then roll into Los Angeles and just own the city?
I don't know if I'd use the word think, but yeah.
I don't know. I got to say, OKC doesn't really terrify me at the moment. Them having Russell Westbrook back, he is a terror. He is a guy who just – there is nobody on the Pelicans who can, like, match up to his explosives. Jrue Holiday will be okay with him, but he's not he doesn't have the speed – that Westbrook does, but I'm not terrified of Oklahoma City right now. I think that they are a team that they're on emotional high getting Westbrook back. They've won their game, in high fashion, and the next game will not be necessarily that big of a deal to them as much. And I think that's a game that can be had, especially in New Orleans, because that is the one game at home before they go on a 3-game streak. But Golden State. In Golden State, like, already I remember games where that crowd swung the game, like just the way it gets into it and they're screaming, top of their lungs, everything going on. That is a truly terrifying proposition for this team, especially if they end up having someone like Jimmer Fredette, a shooting guard, trying to guard either Curry or Thompson. That game is a loss to me without any doubt. And it's the other three that are up for grabs. So I'm actually going to go with a 1-3 record this week. I don't think I can go as high as 2-2, which you seem to be suggesting. 2-2 is possible. Well, 3-1 is possible. But I think it's more likely to be a 1-3, which is going to put this team at 8-11 so far this year. It's tough. I mean, 8-11... If you're in the Eastern Conference, you're okay, but in the Western Conference, you're already starting to worry about sliding out of things. So, and their December schedule is not a lot easier after that. They get the Knicks, which is okay, but then they get Dallas, Cleveland, Golden State, Utah, then Houston and Portland and Oklahoma City and San Antonio and Chicago and Phoenix. I mean, the whole rest of December, it would not be inconceivable that they come out of December with something like a 10-17 or 18 record. If that happens, is the season done, Jason, or do you think they have a chance?
From my point of view, I'm more interested in growth than, I think, particular results. I think done, you mean the playoffs. Am I right?
Yes.
Yeah. So there's a certain part of me that feels like if you really don't have a fighting chance in the playoffs, then it doesn't matter. However,
okay.
I believe that making the playoffs does matter administratively this season. I think making the playoffs is a very big deal. That said, whether you make the playoffs or not really depends on things like injury, right? Will Westbrook hold up? Can the Thunder make it back in, right? So I mean, clearly you can get in with bad records and things like this. So there's always a luck factor with what's going on with other teams. And I think pretty consistently, Monty has his teams overperform, you know, come January. That for whatever reason, there's always this slow start, and then they build. Now, injuries and stuff have happened, and if you look back at the data, there's a surge, but that's Eric Gordon coming back or something like that. But it just, I just get this feeling that he seems to have a better January than November and December. And so I've sort of been asking the same question to myself about the end of January rather than the end of December, partially for the reasons you're talking about and partially with this surge factor. So I'm not trying to dodge the question. I don't think necessarily that the season is over with if they come out, say, 10-17 or what have you at the end of December, but only if they can have a very strong complimentary January and get back in close to 500.
And, you know, that's possible. I mean, I hadn't really focused that hard on the January schedule because I was too terrified by the December one. But it opens with Houston, but then it's Washington, Charlotte, Memphis, Boston, Detroit, Philly, Toronto, New York, Knicks, the Lakers again, Minnesota, Dallas, Philly, Denver, and the Clippers. So there's only like four or five hard games in there.
Well,
and the rest of it...
You know we're not going to beat Philly, right?
Oh, right. Philly, so they're 0-16 now. Do you realize that I forget who I heard this? They are not favored against anybody. They've published odds like up to a few weeks in advance, like of games. They have a home game against it. I forget what team it was, but a team that's only won like six games, and at home, and they're not in favor. They're not favored. Mm. Like everybody expects Philly to lose every single game the entire season.
Somebody needs to see if the owners are betting on the team. Right. Like they just might be working Vegas.
Like, oh.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah. I mean, so I have like these frustrations about the Pelicans. Like I have just moments where I'm like, there is nobody on this team other than Drew Holiday who I want to see next to Anthony Davis for the next 3 years. Like at times I'm just like, take Tyreek, take Ryan Anderson, just take a Sheik, take them all. Just give me Drew and Anthony Davis and a whole bundle of other people. But at least I got that. Like, I got a superstar that is crazy on my team. Philadelphia has nothing.
Even if you buy, right, Noel, right, and their squad of players, pick whichever one, pick whichever draft picks, you know, going forward you think are great that they're going to have. They're right. Just assets. It's not a team.
Yep.
You can't even get behind any particular one. Like, you know you can get behind Davis for X number of years, and then you start sweating. But you know Davis is somebody they're buying into, that they're, you know, hitching the wagon to. You have no idea what they're doing with their squad. None whatsoever.
Yep.
No matter what awards they get or whatever, that's just probably means they're more likely to be traded.
And, you know, Nerlens Noel, I mean, I liked him coming out of college. I thought he had a chance to be a pretty good big man. He's got it hurt a little bit. He's played, you know, 10 games as a starter and averaged 30 minutes in his games. He's posting a PER of 10. He gets 8 points and 6.5 rebounds a game in 30 minutes. And, you know, Davis, you even knew his rookie season this guy was going to be a star. You knew that. Even though he was being limited like to 28 minutes a game, and he had some games where he wasn't great, and he kept getting like small bang-up injuries, you knew he was going to be a star. You can't look at that team in Philly and think, I have a future watching this basketball club at all. The one guy that I've at all found exciting is KJ McDaniels on that team. And KJ flat out refused to take a contract from them that was longer than a year. To give me a 1 year contract so I can get the hell out of here after this year. And when you're building a team where you're supposed to be picking young players and draft picks and developing them all together, if your draft picks are wanting to leave after 1 year, I mean, that's just a disaster for you. There's nothing to... Oh. No, anyways, this is the Philadelphia podcast. I cannot... If I was a blogger for Philadelphia, I would probably have already quit. I just... What's the point?
Well, on the upside, we get them twice. So it's justified.
That's true. In that 1 month.
So it's justified talking about them. Yeah. We'll just splice this into the later podcast. But really, I just think it's given the lopsidedness of the schedule. Like I said, to me, I'm doing my best to reserve my rational judgment till the end of January on lots of things. Emotionally, I'm disappointed and I'm a little pissed off. You know, like it wasn't supposed to be this way.
All right. So let me ask you, we never really talked about this too much. I want to get this one question out to you before we end this podcast. Tyreek Evans.
Mm-hmm.
Some games he is fantastic. Some games he is a walking disaster. If you were told right now that this offseason you could just send him somewhere, get nothing in return, just Tyreek Evans, he's going to go to some other team. He's wiped off our books. Means we have now another $12 million to spend on whatever we want to. So I guess in some ways this is a question. Do you think he's worth his contract? But you knew you could do that. Would you let him walk or do you want to keep him?
Given those two options, I'd want to keep him.
Okay.
You know, I don't.
So you feel he's worth his contract then?
I do.
Okay.
You know, especially given that it's declining. And I think his is the one that's got some incentive money, something like that. It's just like a squirrel fart worth of incentive money. But, you know, but just given these little things, it's declining. He does a lot of things for you. I think he's a very useful player on the team. And I think he also has value to other teams. So I really can't find a huge fault with the contract, not even factoring in what TV money might do, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
I will say that I don't really like him in the starting lineup. I feel like he takes away from Drew and Anthony, and I think those two are more the future of this team than Evans. And I mean, I've said it before, and I think he is very tradable. I think Anderson is very tradable, and I think those two guys can form the backbone of a deal to bring in a very exciting player. And I am hoping that playing Evans more helps bring something like that about, not because I want to get rid of either of them, but I think there's a piece missing, and we might need to engage in a big move to bring that piece in.
Yeah, I think I'll pull the, you know, put this out there. Dante Cunningham coming in, we have some contacts with the team, and we're pretty sure through via those contacts that he is going to be the thing. But so what I'm saying next, that's not, we haven't heard anything about this from the team, so don't think that's what it is. But your fantasy from this Dante Cunningham thing is exactly what you just said, that Dante Cunningham's coming in to replace Ryan Anderson, and that somehow there's going to be a Ryan Anderson Tyreek Evans trade. Is that what you're like? Is that what you're hoping for? Would that make you like a happy person if those two people went out and they brought in like some awesome small forward or some sort of wing player that has, you know, the complete package passing?
Well, I mean, we've seen Dell do something like that before. So prior to Chris leaving,
but not with highly talented, mostly with like lesser talents.
Oh yes, no, it was okay. The opposite. So they brought in, you know, Bayless and then Jack, and then brought in Landry when West and Paul were leaving, right? So this would be bringing the smaller player to replace a leaving Anderson, perhaps, right? And going forward, not now. And then get rid of those two and bring in a sort of more dynamic wing that can play inside and outside rather than just Evans, who's more of just an inside guy. You know, so basically Anderson plus Evans in one guy, right? You know, do I think that this is the move that sets it up? No, I think it's a move of opportunity. But potentially does it fit with their line of thinking? Yeah, right? So it doesn't contradict it. But, I mean, I've been hoping for a while that, or I've been suspicious that because of the way Anderson and Evans were sort of gotten, they were gotten because they were on the, in the, this window display as restricted free agents. That, whereas Drew, they reached out for, right? Mm-hmm. He's not available, but they reached out for him and they gave up draft picks, which are like magic from heaven that turned into cool. Austin Rivers, right?
Yes.
That to get them. And Oshik wasn't available. They reached out to get him because this was the guy they wanted that Monty had been saying, well, we can't play Davis against such and such guys, right? We need to do this. And you know, I've written extensively on Oshik this summer, the deal to get him and what the effects I thought he would have on the defense. And I'm a big proponent of that move right now. The method they acquired those guys, I think, says something about what they think about them, as opposed to the other two who were gotten just because they were happened to be available. They were good deals on sale. That doesn't mean that they're not part of the plan. It doesn't really mean that anything I'm saying is right. But it's something in common between those. And they spent a lot of time keeping Davis and Anderson apart, about as much as possible, given the minutes they play. And last season, the same with Evans and Davis. So it's like you want Drew to play with Davis, but you don't want the other guys to play with Davis. Doesn't that say something? There's a few indicators into what they might be thinking. So,
yeah.
You know,
so
now,
there you
now
have it, everybody. Evans and Anderson are going to be traded for something magical.
Hopefully. And I just love Holiday, so I'm partially biased, right? Like, I want to get that out there, right? Like, he's my favorite guy on the squad right now. I really like him. I got really excited one night out at sushi because I thought he was in the restaurant, but it wasn't him.
I should have you know that if Anderson and Tyreke Evans were traded, my best friend would probably murder himself, commit suicide. His two favorite players by far on the team. Nothing makes him more excited than a barreling Tyreke Evans and a step back fade away post up from 15 feet from Ryan Anderson. He thinks those are the best things in the world. For me, they're both really cool and terrifying at the same time.
Well, is your second best friend a close second?
Or distant second? I'll have to hope so. Otherwise, I'll be pretty lonely at all my best friend moments.
Yeah. Yeah, so. Been there.
All right. So do you have anything else you want to talk about on this team, or should we wrap this up?
No. No, I guess that's a good one. Let's wrap it up.
All right. So thanks, everybody, for listening to In the Know, and we'll be back next Sunday night.
Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G, because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters. The more your network matters. The more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network.
Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of 3 mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.